Happy Thursday on the Ira Kaufman podcast. It's a special podcast, Ira, because we are live at Hooters in Port Richey. This is the way it should be, Ira. You know, none of this little room at $1 where we're sequestered and no windows.
Well, you know, we're waited on hand and foot over here, Lee, as it should be.
Well, the key is who's waiting on us.
Who's waiting on
not, not like Steve said, at $1 we're in a dungeon of a room.
There's
no windows.
There's no beet salad on this menu, Steven.
There
but,
doesn't need
nevertheless,
to be.
Nevertheless, I'm enjoying it.
No, but you did mow down a salad, so good for you, Ira.
Lee. Man, he did mow that thing down quick, didn't he?
Yes, I did.
Lee and I have been mowing down beers, so that's always a fun time.
I'm looking at the TV. I'm waiting for my San Francisco Giants to make a move at these winter meetings. Other teams are grabbing guys left and right. My 98-loss Giants team hasn't done a damn thing. What are you doing out there, Bruce Bochy?
Well, they kept Bochy. That's number one. But I thought that the Giants are going to do what I thought the Cardinals were going to do. Marlins are having a fire sale. They wouldn't get anybody. Well,
the Cardinals just plucked away a nice ball player.
All right, Sage. Hey, your podcast.
I take it we're not going to talk about baseball on this podcast.
No, maybe at the end. If you want to let it roll at the end, we can do that. All right, I'm Steve Isbitz. Lee DeCamper's here with JoeBucksFan.com. The Sage, of course, is the custodian of Canton himself, Mr. Ira Kaufman, perhaps the most popular sports figure in Tampa Bay. I will call you the most popular non-player in Tampa Bay.
Hey,
That is not arguable.
Within a month, I would say right about a month from now, we will get the names of the 15 finalists for the Hall of Fame, the guys that are going to be in the room, and we'll see how many presentations yours truly has to make. The way I look at it, the more the better.
So you're okay with all that workload?
Oh, bring Simeon in, bring Rhonda in, and of course Lynch is going to be there. That's all right. I can multitask over there.
All right, Sage.
You may continue.
Your podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Ira, now you could save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon with their Like New Certified Pre-Owned Cadillacs. That's Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. That runs through the end of the month, Ira. And, of course, our friends at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, don't miss it. Last chance to save is right now for this year. Last chance to save at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. General Manager Brian Danahy has the season's best offers. Lease 2018 XT5s. For only $319 a month with zero down, or get 0% financing 60 months at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher, or shop all the year-end clearance offers right there at EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. Offers expire at the end of the month, and Ira, I can't emphasize enough at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, this really is last chance for those season's best leased offers. People wait for it all year long. It's the last chance sale at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. We've got so much to talk about on this podcast. This is sort of an exciting, tense times for Bucks fans, you know?
We've been here before, Steven. We've been here with the 4-9 or something close to it. Last place, nice, comfortable last place finish in the NFC South. We've been there before. And we've also been in the December where we're talking about whether the head coach is going to survive. Lee, we've been here all too often in the last 6 or 7 years.
Way too often.
Way too often.
So, Ira, I've got actually, since we're recording at night and since we're at Hooters, I brought a long list of topics.
Lee, that looks like a three-hour podcast on that sheet over there, Isbitz.
What, do you got a curfew or something?
All right, let's get right to it, Ira, because you know what's on the mindset of everybody is the coaching change that could be coming down in less than 3 weeks. That's just where we are. It's John Gruden week on Monday night, and we'll talk about that, but you're on the top of this situation like nobody else. And, Lee, I'm curious to see what you think. The Glazer mindset. If they want to fire Dirk Cutter, and which you said appears likely that we're going in that direction, do you believe the Glazers have a Gruden or bust mindset? Well, what I mean by that is it let's bring in John Gruden, the time is right, let's do it? Or is it Cutter's no good, and we're going to do an extensive search to find our guy? Or do we keep Cutter unless we can get John Gruden?
I think there might be a link here between Gruden's hiring and Cutter's firing. There might be a link here.
It's like a done deal, hiring?
No, I didn't say it was a done deal. But if it turns out that Cutter is dismissed after one bad season, let's reiterate that, one bad season. That's what we're down to now here in Tampa in terms of keeping your job. If that does happen, you're going to find that a big reason that it happened is that they feel they're going to hit a home run by bringing John Gruden back. Ooh. If you fire Cutter, and you bring in some coordinator off another team, the Josh McDaniels, the Matt Patricias, that's not a home run for Buck fans. That's not a home run.
What is
now,
a home run?
Now, I do want to say this, Steve, and tell me where I'm off base here. If the Glazers are leaning towards bringing Dirk Cutter back right now, as we speak, if the Cleveland Browns can say Hugh Jackson's coming back from a guy who's won like one game out of the last two seasons, and if the Glazers are leaning towards Dirk Cutter, why don't you say so?
Well, that's not their style, is it?
Why don't you say so?
Well, I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you, but that's not their style, is it?
Is all this turmoil swirling around the Bucks to the Glazers' advantage? If they indeed intend to keep Dirk Cutter as their head coach, they can stop it right now.
Well, the turmoil is sure, it gets people talking about the Bucks. If you had no turmoil, who would be talking about the Bucks right now?
Yeah, but they're talking about it in negative terms. The Glazers.
What's the old saying? Bad publicity is better than no publicity.
I understand.
I hear what you're saying, Ira. I hear what you're saying, but there's a couple of layers there. One, I'm glad you think that there's linkage between firing Cutter and hiring Gruden. That could be there, so that's interesting. I didn't know what you were going to say. Of course, we do no prep for this fantastic podcast, but you know what? There's a lot of speculation now that the Browns will actually back off that claim that they made for Hugh Jackson because they never really thought that they'd go 0-16. And the thought is, hey, if we go 0-16, maybe Jackson is not the coach.
So now the owner's word doesn't mean anything?
And remember, they have a new general manager who's going to want his coach.
So why did the owner say it?
Well,
he could have remained silent.
Look who you're talking about. Isn't he a buffoon?
Yeah. Hey, one more thing about this. Guys, one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important. Again, a big if. If the Glazers are leaning to bringing back Dirk Cutter, another advantage of saying it now would be you head off a potential disaster Monday night with the We Want Gruden chance. You say Cutter's coming back.
Oh, I see.
And all of a sudden, those fans don't know what the heck to do, even if the Bucks are losing.
The fans really don't want Cutter back. That's not going to stop them from chanting. That's not going to stop them.
Well, I guess, like Steve says, we'll talk in depth about the Monday night encounter.
Well, the thing about the Glazer factor, and I quit trying to figure out Team Glazer.
You're right. It's not their style.
Yeah,
it's not their style.
We're expecting to do X, Y, and Z, and they've never done that.
Their style hasn't been particularly successful since 2007.
True. That's true. Now, here's the thing about Chucky. Both of you guys to chime in on this. Clearly, there was a reason they got rid of Chucky before. We know. We don't need to rehash why. We know why. I can't believe the Glazers would tell Chucky, we'll bring you back, we'll give you full control like you had before. You get to pick the general manager, and you get to run the draft. I can't imagine they'd bring it back under the same circumstances.
You get the same circumstances, Chucky, you're probably going to get the same result.
Yeah, and would Chucky agree to come back if he didn't have that power?
You're going to get the same result without the Super Bowl. You're not going to get the Super Bowl because this team is not ready to win a Super Bowl like the 2002 Bucks were. Now, Gruden had a big hand in hyping up the offense.
No question, no question.
No question. There's no there's no Derrick Brooks on this team. There's no Warren Sapp. There's no John
The answer to Lee's question ties to what you just said. After all this failure, maybe the Glazers just throw their hands in the air and say, well, we don't know what the hell we're doing. Let's give it to John. He's got some juice. He's got some energy. He's as good as anybody else we've hired.
Maybe Light could stay in that scenario. Maybe.
I don't know. But maybe just out of desperation, because in many ways, the Gruden hire, if it happens, is very much out of desperation.
It's guys, facts of desperation.
That's what it does.
Well, Lovey was a hire of desperation.
Not in their mind.
Well, they were trying to take a page back to the Dungy days, right? Well, to me, that's desperation.
Well,
if you're reaching back a decade prior and hoping to recapture that magic, that's desperation.
Well, Lovey was only out of work for a year, and he had got fired after a 10-6 season. So Gruden being out for so long
he
hasn't even coached under these new labor laws of two-a-days and all this other stuff.
Very good point.
And the new rules.
The only thing he's coached is high school.
Steve, if you did a poll on Joe Bucks Fan tomorrow where you said, all right, assume Dirk Cutter is not returning in 2018, do you want John Gruden to be the head coach of your Bucks?
Be like
85%. What do you think the results would be of that poll, Mr. Risbitz? There are some Gruden deniers out there.
I'd say two-thirds Gruden.
Yeah.
Hire him. Two-thirds hire him.
Yeah, two-thirds hire him. And that's really, I'll head to my next question here, Sage. Whether it's Gruden or it's Cutter, whoever is coach next year, is this situation, as the Bucks sit here right now, granted we have three games left, and a lot can happen in those three games, is this a rebuild situation? Are the Bucks in a rebuild mode now?
I'll tell you what has to be rebuilt first and foremost, the coaching staff.
Of course.
It has to be rebuilt. Whether Cutter stays or Cutter goes.
Yes, there's no question.
And if Dirk Cutter doesn't agree to that, Dirk Cutter doesn't stay.
Yeah.
Is that understood? Am I stretching this?
No.
This is a poorly coached football
team. Clearly on defense.
And they're not getting the most out of the talent. Now, some areas, they don't have a lot of talent. D-line, we've talked about it. I don't see the studs. I don't see them.
Outside of one.
And
he's 30 years
but
old.
But I see a team with three darn good linebackers. Oh. And the defense still can't stop anybody.
I'll argue four.
You know, and a Pro Bowl cornerback, you know, and a rookie safety who looks pretty darn good, and a five-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle for most of the season. Still can't stop anybody.
Well, Steve stole my thunder last
night. Steve,
what
I'm saying is whether Cutter stays or doesn't, you're not going to recognize this coaching staff in 2018.
That's
a given.
Steve stole my thunder today. Last night. And I referenced this on a previous podcast as well. Yes, I'll take a Bud Light, please. Thank you. Keep it on there. Well, maybe we get Great Bay Distributors to jump on board.
In the middle of a podcast, we got the Kemper's orders over here?
Why not?
I'm thinking ahead. Fantastic, yeah.
I'm thinking ahead here.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, you got to think of revenue. Revenue.
You figure out your tip. You figure out your tip yet?
Oh, I know I'll tip her.
All right, keep going.
At any rate, three guys on the Bucs defensive line combined are getting $19 million this year. They've got a grand total of 2.5 sacks.
Between them?
Between the three of them, which is just outrageous.
Swaggy Baker.
Swaggy Baker, Robert Ayers, who I happen to like.
And Golston.
And I was going to write this. I'm already thinking of writing stories postseason. So, you know, I'm going to hit this up. I'm going to hit this up in February or middle of January. Boom, Steve doesn't wait for a damn thing. Steve picked up on it. He picked up.
Steve, some
says,
fans.
You can unload the defensive line quickly.
Guys, some fans think that this is pie in the sky, and if you don't have players and you're not a great personnel team, that coaches don't matter. I don't believe that.
Oh, that's nonsense.
I do not believe that, Steve.
That's nonsense.
I think a top-notch staff, top-notch, that gets the most out of the talent you do and builds the schemes around the personnel, I think that's what the NFL's all about now.
Well, it's interesting. During Gruden's recent interviews, as well as I think when he was at McDill, from the video I saw, he's said multiple times it's all about the staff. That's what he always goes back to, is you got to hire, have great coaches. And that would scare me, because what kind of defensive coaching staff is he going to put together? I mean, where is he going to go?
That's a good point.
Who wants to work with John Gruden? Monty was here before.
He knows everybody in this business, Steve. He knows everybody in the business.
Okay, but doesn't mean he's the greatest guy to work for. And he's going to have...
Money's not going to be an object, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. It makes it all interesting when you think of him and as the broader head coach. But I got to say, I know a lot of fans are driving around town right now, Ira. They heard you just say, you're not going to recognize, if it's Cutter coming back, you're not going to recognize his coaching staff. Well, then why are we bringing him back?
Because that's, in a way, you're saying you're not the problem. Your staff's the problem. Dirk Cutter didn't forget how to call plays. He didn't forget how to call plays. They're averaging 350 yards a game, but only 20 points a game. The problem is they're not turning those into points.
I haven't checked recently. Weren't the Bucs number 5 passing team in the NFL?
I believe that's right.
I think so.
So they're doing something right. And don't give me this crap about garbage points or garbage yards late in the game. What, a team supposed to lay down? They're not supposed to get back in the game? Give me a break.
And I'm not just talking about the defensive side of the staff. There's going to have to be changes on the offensive side. It's going to come down from the top. The Glazers are not immune to ordering these things as a precondition for you to keep your job. If that's the way they're thinking, there's going to have to be changes on both sides.
There's only one defensive coach I'd bring back, Duffner. I mean, their linebackers are fantastic. Defensive backs, my gosh. I don't know which is worse, honestly. I don't know which is worse, defensive line or defensive backs.
And if Cutter's got a deep six, Mike Smith, Cutter's going to do it. And Mike Smith will understand.
I'm glad you brought that up. Great take on the radio today. We're recording this Wednesday night. It's past Ira's bedtime.
Somebody's drinking coffee.
Tom Coren, who's been in this market.
You're going to quote Tom Coren on the Ira Kaufman podcast?
That was a great take.
The man's going out on Friday. He's going out on a sword.
He's retiring. 40-something.
He's going to play golf 5 times a week.
40-something years in the business.
40 years in the business.
Actually, Ira.
That might be better than me.
Coren told the story today. He was on with Rock Riley on 1040 AM. Of course, Rock's part of the Joe Bucks fan family. Coren told the story that he worked with Mad Dog when Mad Dog was a kid. And they work together, and they're still friends.
I had no idea that happened.
Yeah, he's explaining that Chris Russo, your friend,
Where is this? In Orlando?
In Orlando. They work together, and that, you know, he expressed how proud he is of Russo and how they keep in touch. So, they're interesting. Anyway, Tom Coren.
Is he surprised at Russo's success?
No. He said he loves the guy. They still keep in touch, he said. Nice. Anyway, so Tom Coren, who used to do sports radio in this town for years, had a great show in the mid-90s, been on ABC, Action
News. Who didn't do sports radio in this town, the Kemper, in the last 25 years?
Me. Isbitz did. I never.
You had Nancy, you know, the sports babe. She was on a long time.
Corin's show is very good. Not the point. So Corin said, you know what? He said, Mike Smith's a savvy guy, has been around this league. Corin said he's confident that Mike will go up to Dirk Cutter and say, Dirk, this is before the season ends. Dirk, don't defend me. My defense is indefensible. Don't go on the sword for me. Don't worry about it. Do what you got to do. And we've talked about this dynamic before. I thought it was a great take, and I could see that happening.
I do. I don't think that's far-fetched.
No, that sounds like Mike Smith. He's class act.
You know, it's funny the way those two guys have been together in different roles, where Cutter worked for Smith. Now Smith works for Cutter. And then they were together on Jacksonville under Jack Del Rio. Mm-hmm. Both had, you know, coordinator, roles. It's a fascinating history between those two. They're thick as thieves.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in a negative sense.
Yeah, yeah. They're
and
tight.
You're right. And you're right. Smith has so much respect for Cutter and vice versa that I think it will be understood by both parties what has to be done if it's so ordered by the end of the season.
Well, the best thing that could happen if the Giants hire Mike Smith. Then everybody gets off the hook scot-free.
Yes. And I think Mike Smith does deserve another shot as a head coach. I'm telling you. He did a good job in Atlanta.
He seems like a heck of a lot better organizer than he is a coordinator. Did Cutter not tell us this when Cutter sat down for your podcast last summer, right after OTAs were over with and all that stuff? Is this where I heard this, or maybe I heard somewhere else that Cutter and Mike Smith got to be friends? Cutter was at Arizona State at the time. And they got to be friends at some coach's clinic. And as a result of that friendship, they were always keeping in touch, bouncing ideas off each other's heads. And then when an opportunity came, when Mike Smith left Baltimore to go to Jacksonville.
And Cutter was dismissed at Arizona State.
Well, I don't know if he was dismissed, or I don't know the timeline exactly. But Mike Smith really swung doors open for Cutter with Jack Del Rio. He was like, you need to bring this guy in.
That makes sense. That makes sense. A lot of loyalty between them, no question about it.
Yeah, I just thought it was an interesting take.
That's a good take.
I could see that happening. I just thought it was a good line. Mike Smith knows his defense is indefensible, which we all agree with that.
Indefensible.
It's brutal.
Corin finally comes up with a good take on his way out the door over there, isn't it?
All right, Sage.
Well, why am I taking a shot at little Tommy Corin?
That's fine.
He's a good man.
Fire away. It's your podcast.
He's a good man.
We love to take shots. I do, anyway. all right, so Ira, back to what we were saying, though, is because you're telling me, you've just told the people of Tampa Bay and across the land, all the people listen to you on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, you've just told them all that if Cutter comes back, the Glazers might tell him which offensive coaches to change. They're going to tell him to change the whole damn defense. And
wouldn't you? If you were
I don't bring the guy back if I don't trust what he's done over 2 years. You know what I mean?
So what about the first year? 9-7? You don't trust that?
I didn't say fire him. I'm saying if the Glazers don't trust him, then why do you tell him to change everything? You know what I mean?
Because you have to sell some changes to the public. You got tickets to sell.
Well, I think
if you bring him back in the same coaching staff and you add a couple of free agents, and the seventh pick in the draft, that ain't a remarkable offseason marketing strategy.
You just tell him, look, reasonable people can see there's – we got to make changes on defense. There's no way we can continue this. And again, I just pointed out a little while ago. Last time I checked, number five, and that's with your starting quarterback going down. Number five passing offense in the NFL. It doesn't sound like
unless the Glazers believe we got lousy personnel. Coaches did the best job they could. In that case, I can't come back.
I just think it's an interesting concept to say, we like you, Dirk, as the head coach, but all the coaches you picked suck. I mean, that's a big part of the job.
We didn't say all the coaches. You like some of the coaches.
Yeah, like I said, Duffner, I hate to say this because I get along with all these guys, but I gotta call it as I see it. Nothing about Bajakian impresses me. You know, everybody says, oh, Jameis can't do this, Jameis can't do that. Well, he sure as hell did it in college. So what changed? One or two things. George Whitfield, who I know quarterback gurus, don't like him. So, you know, do with that what you will. And Bajakian, that's only two differences between Jameis in the NFL and Jameis in college. Jameis never had any problems with deep balls in college. Jameis didn't have all these fundamental issues. He didn't have that in college. I witnessed when he almost threw a perfect game at Pittsburgh. I was there in the stands.
I don't think you take the play calling away from Cutter if that's the one thing you're thinking about. I don't think you do that.
No, I'm not thinking about that at all. Yeah. I just look at it this way, Aaron. It's an interesting just thing to debate. If you're the owner,
you're saying, well, why are you bringing
and you
the
like
head
the
coach
head
back?
Coach? Why bring him back if you're telling him to change all
the
things
he did?
Well,
if you still believe in the fundamental relationship between Cutter and Winston. That's a critical aspect of this. And you have to still believe in
it. Yeah,
that.
And obviously the Glazers, to
that
quote.
That means you don't believe in the report.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. Yeah. To quote Dirk Cutter, I know what the truth is. So they should know what the truth is.
In that regard, maybe the Glazers know what the truth is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The Glazers would know. Yeah. If Dirk Cutter knows and Jason Light knows, Glazers know.
And on this whole front, what makes it interesting is that we've got three games to go, and if the Bucks find a way to win two out of three here, it changes the whole narrative, the whole dynamic, the whole philosophy, because if they actually win those games, a couple of things happen. The Bucks scored a ton of points, and no one's going to want to touch that.
And Winston plays well.
And Winston plays well, because he's not going to win without playing well. Or
exactly.
Mike Smith found the miracle.
Well, that might be too late.
Yeah, and if that happens, what you're saying, Steve, I chuckle it up as a fluke. Because right now, that five games that played good defense last year toward the end of the season?
Yes.
Right now, it looks like a fluke.
Sure. So, yeah, it's pie in the sky. But if they win those games, odds are Winston played out of his mind. Yeah. And then you're like, whoa.
And they beat some good teams. Down the stretch.
Well, I'm thinking about this, and am I the only one that points this out? Before the season started, not only did Jameis Winston have a winning record against Atlanta, which went to the Super Bowl last year, he had 3-1. He was 3-1 against Atlanta in 2 years. He had a winning record in the division. Isn't that what you want your quarterback to do? Have a winning record in the division?
And now they're looking at 0-6 in the division, Steve.
Yeah. Well, we still got games to go. Now, I know I'm offending you by quoting Tom Coren again.
Again?
Well, he had another good take.
Why would you be offended?
It was a money segment. Tom Coren said...
Can't you quote Paul Delgado at this point? What do you mean, Tom Coren?
This one's almost more...
He wasn't on Rock Riley's show, right?
This one's more important in a lot of ways. Coren said...
Is this from the same show?
From today.
Same show.
From today. Coren said he spoke to a former Buccaneers quarterback. Didn't give a name. Said that he talked to this guy, like, how would John Gruden treat Jameis Winston? How would he handle him?
So obviously it was a quarterback that played for Gruden.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay.
Yeah, he made that clear. My bad. He said that quarterback told him that Gruden would completely rip Jameis apart, tear him to shreds until he just lost everything he ever believed in and confidence, and then would build him back up his way. Would completely tear him apart.
That's scary.
That sounds right.
And that's scary as hell.
Yeah, because
in other words, Coren did it again. Another good point.
Well, outside of, everybody always points to Rich Gannon. Name another quarterback that he developed. Chucky developed. Brad Gronkowski?
Garcia was a seasoned pro by the
Bingo.
Time he got him.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He didn't develop. He hadn't developed.
Chris Sims plateaued.
He never developed him.
They won a division title.
Yeah,
but they also lost a playoff game when the defense gave up 120 yards. That's never that's a record that still stands.
Who was it that dropped that pass in the end zone? I always want to say Shepard.
Adele Shepard.
Adele Shepard. Very good.
All right. Sage.
You've quoted Coren twice, and that's one more time than I've gotten to talk on this show.
All right, we've got some juice. We've got some juice to talk about with Ian Rappaport and that report. We're going to explore that a little bit more. I've got plenty else here, but Ira, want to remind everybody a few key things. We'll run it down here. Monday Night Football is Monday, so that means your next podcast is going to be very special because we're going to record that in the very wee hours. The wee hours. We're going to get you a little coffee, and you'll be all jacked up.
We're gonna sit in Mike Smith's suite where he calls the defensive signals.
We're going
in there 2 hours later.
That's bad luck, Sage.
I might find some of the scraps of paper like, come on, Grimes, get your head out of your butt or something.
Well, there's another thing to talk about.
That's another thing to talk
so
about.
So when your podcast, and I'm going to be up too late to edit this thing and make it pretty, so everyone's going to hear the Raw podcast Tuesday morning, which will be a lot of fun.
It'll be in the wake of the Gruden night. And a ring of honor.
Fresh Sage coming up. Let's see. NFL Photo Store. Get your Christmas gifts, your holiday gifts. NFL Photo Store. Get the link off joebucksfan.com.
Still time for that, Steven? Still a little time for that,
Still
right?
time. 25% off. You get any kind of picture from all kinds of great action shots of your favorite Buccaneers, any NFL team, they'll frame it for you, mail it out. 25% off, just use your Joe Bucks fan code. Our friends at fanretreat.com, check them out. Cure Bowl is around the corner in Orlando. They've got all the tickets and packages. Todd Wright, Fantasy Football Podcast on Joe Bucks Fan. Todd, for all the guys in the playoffs for fantasy, he did this last year. He's doing podcasts at least every other day for all the guys in the playoffs. So a lot of great stuff there.
So why don't you mention where I am in this fantasy?
Well, there
league,
I go. I was just going to say, Ira, tell us about your fantasy exploits quickly.
Well, Lee, I don't want to tout my own horn over here.
Sure,
but
you do.
I scored the most points in the league during the regular season. It's a 12-team league. I am not a veteran of fantasy league.
Well,
Isbitt's talked me into this thing.
I'll ask you right now. This will get people driving off into the ditch when they hear this. How many fantasy leagues have you been in prior to this year?
I think I did one with the Tribune I lost $5 on.
And that was how many years ago?
That's about 12 years ago.
So one fantasy league in your life prior to this year, and you're winning.
Isbitt's challenged me. When Isbitt's challenges me to something, I either quit or I go do it.
So that's why you didn't have the beet salad tonight?
led the league in scoring league. And that's after picking up Deshaun Watson a month into the season, which looked like I was going to run away
Gold,
with this
yeah.
thing. Then he gets hurt, but I still got Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson.
Ooh.
I've been riding Russell Wilson. Anyway, I'm in the semifinals. Wish me luck this weekend.
And how much research did you do prior to the draft?
I bought a couple of magazines, and I listened to Tom Corin, and I figured I'm set. Yeah, you like that, isn't
it? You did a lot of work, Ira. All right, let's get back to the action here.
What would Javier say about this?
He'd love it. He'd absolutely love it.
You know, Lee mentioned something that I wrote about, which was the Bucks have the opportunity to clear, and we're talking by March, not by August of next year, 5 days into the league year, Ira, in March. If the Bucks ditch Chris Baker, William Golston, and Robert Ayers, that clears $17 million. If they wait till after the fifth day of the league year in March, then they're going to owe a lot of that money. So that's $17 million. Dirk Cutter stood there and told us, we don't have $17 million laying around to pay Calais Campbell.
Which was wrong.
Which, was a bunch of crap. What do you make of that? And would you do that? Would you blow up the whole D-line and start over?
Gone, gone, and gone.
Thank you.
I'm not even thinking twice about it. And it's not like they are in salary cap hell to begin with.
Yeah.
Now, I do understand that they have some guys that they're going to have to extend down the line. There's no question about
Evans,
it.
Evans, number one.
Quan Alexander's not going anywhere. Of course, Winston's an open story.
Yes.
You know? But if they decide to proceed with Winston, that's the biggest chunk of all.
We'll find this out surely by September, I would think.
We got to wonder about Brent Grimes. He's not playing for $2 million next year.
They're so desperate, they may want to cough up that money.
To answer your question, I'm speaking for DeKemp here. Gone, gone, and gone.
You beat me to the punch, Steve. I was thinking, this would be a good story to write in January. And it took him like 8 hours. And he writes.
Somebody's going to say, whoa, wait a minute. You got to have some depth. You got to have some people on the D-line.
2.5
I'll go get some people.
Yeah,
thank you.
For a lot less.
Go get them.
Yeah, for a lot less.
And look, obviously, we're not going to talk draft tonight, but they've got to address the defensive line in the draft. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
They're going to have a top 8, top 9 pick.
Unless, Steve says, they win two out of the next three. And
they'll get
the second
best D-lineman or something like that.
Yeah, they're going to end up drafting somewhere between 7 and 15, no matter what. So, I mean, it's not a huge gap there. But we'll see.
I don't want another defensive end from Clemson. I don't care what the guy's name is. I don't want a defensive lineman from Clemson. I'm sorry. You're out.
Harold Landry or one of the Chubb boys.
All right, Ira. Back to Mr. Gruden.
Back to Mr. Gruden.
I've got to disagree with you on something because it was sticking in my craw.
Craw. Well, that was predictable, wasn't it? Speaking of predictables offense.
You mean based on some column of mine or
something? No, based on the last podcast and what we just talked about here with you're talking about re-signing Jameis. I'm going to say this again, and everybody's got to get it into their head, and I know you disagree. Maybe you change your mind. If John Gruden gets the job and he says whatever he's got to do to get the job, if he doesn't want Jameis here in his second season, which would be Jameis's fifth year, Jameis is not going to be the quarterback, Ira. If Gruden wants to do that, he is the guy calling the shots in 2019. And that's just the reality.
What if Gruden goes 7-9 next year?
They're going to fire
him? Does he still have that much clout?
Well, what if the owners want him?
It all comes down to the owners in that case.
I don't think so. I think the owners, if they hire John Gruden, they're saying, John, the franchise is yours. Here are the keys, baby. Bring the magic. Rebuild this team. Do what you got to do. Obviously, Gruden's going to like the guy if he plays well in 2018. But if it's
and he's going to like the guy going into the job, or he wouldn't take the job.
Absolutely.
So that's number one.
But Gruden's fickle.
Yeah, look at Brett Favre and Jeff Garcia.
If they go 7-9 and Jameis is throwing balls to Julius Peppers and making stupid plays, I think the Glazers would say, John, all right, 4 years in, Jameis is still turning the ball over. You want to give up on him? We trust you.
It's not going to be easy for the Glazers to give up on Winston if he's not suspended. That's an extra layer.
Sure.
If he's not suspended, it's going to be hard for the Glazers to turn on Winston,
and
I think.
Just to remind people, your preliminary information from a towering figure in the NFL was?
He's not going to get suspended. There's not going to be any penalty for the Uber.
Preliminary.
For the alleged Uber incident.
Yeah, preliminary information.
Ira, I'm going to argue this with you. Year two of John Gruden, we're pretending he's here. Year two of John Gruden, and he says, I don't want Jameis as my quarterback.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
It's a huge problem, and they're not going to win that war with Gruden. He holds all the cards.
What do you mean? The owners can't? Wait.
Well, are they going to fire Gruden in year two?
They're firing coaches right and left as it is.
And suppose he says, you know what, guys? That didn't work for me last time. Work it out. Blah, blah, blah. I'm doing what I want. You want to fire me? Go ahead.
And guess what they'll do? See you, John. They've done it before. They'll do it again.
I think you're underestimating how entrenched the Glazers are with what they believe is a franchise quarterback. They don't give that up easily. Again, suspension could affect that. It could.
And what happened the last time a coach got rid of a franchise quarterback in this town?
You know, McKay could be easily dispatched more than Winston can be easily dispatched.
So you think the buck?
My opinion.
McKay.
When he had the showdown with Gruden.
Oh, yeah.
This is a franchise quarterback we're talking about, at least in the Glazer mind.
So in a hypothetical year two of John Gruden, 2019.
I think the Glazer's too smart to have that kind of a showdown with the Glazers.
He should know better.
If he doesn't like, I'm just saying, a year two of Gruden, and he just legitimately doesn't like Winston, says this guy doesn't have it, he's not learning fast enough. Do you really think that they're going to trust Gruden less than Jameis?
I understand your hypothetical, but Lee, let's remind Steve that for Gruden to take the job, it means he's going in with an understanding that he really likes this guy. Mm-hmm. And he's seen him for 3 years, and he still likes this guy.
I'll throw you the curveball. Now, Belichick speaking on the record, who knows what his motivation was. But I think it was Greg Allman that basically asked him, hey, do you think Winston's the quarterback? When Belichick did the conference call prior to the Bucs Monday night game with the Patriots, Belichick's response was, I don't know what you want if it's not Winston.
Well, you got to be careful there.
Because
he treats Blaine Gabbert like that, too, when he's playing him. He does.
For argument's sake, let's say that was genuine. Yeah. We know that Glazers put a lot of stock in what Belichick says.
Well, I'm flat.
You saw the quotes from David Carr. Now, who's David Carr?
Sure.
I quoted. but he's played the position.
Sure.
And he's not very high on Mr. Winston.
And Trent Dilfer played a position, too, and he worships Jameis.
But I'm fast-forwarding to 2019.
I understand.
So none of that applies. I'm just saying.
Winston has a bad year and leads to a bad year for Gruden.
Let's say Winston doesn't progress. He's just sort of Winston.
Same old
Jameis.
And how's the team?
And everybody agrees that, okay, year four, Jameis is the 16th best quarterback in the NFL. Starter. Middle of the pack.
And how'd the team do?
Team's 7-9, 8-8, 8-8. If Gruden,
in other words, like Cutter.
I just think Gruden wins the standoff.
And Gruden is telling the Glazers at that point, I would not invest a lot of money with Jameis.
Don't invest in him. We're better off without him. We'll get in a new guy.
I think at that point, you play out that fifth-year option and see what happens.
Well, Steve said something here, and I think I referenced this in a story before, being conspiracy theorist about the Winston report and stuff. Maybe the people who dropped that report in Rappaport's lap are thinking the same thing Steve's thinking. And they're like, we got to get this guy out of there. This is a train wreck in Tampa Bay. We got to get him out of there.
You're saying once Gruden is hired, if he's hired, he's going to have a lot of clout, and I cannot argue with that hypothesis.
Well, he has the Glazers' trust.
What NFL podcast do you ever hear anybody drop the word hypothesis?
Hypotheses. And you say buttress every other day.
I know you like that word, buttress.
Good stuff.
All right, Ira, thank you for indulging me. Now, let's go back to this Ian Rappaport report.
What's Corin say about it? Let's get to the bottom of this.
I don't think that came up.
Should I Twitter him? He might be online.
Corin's been mentioned extensively on this podcast.
Twice, Ira. Come on. For those who've been hiding, okay, Ian Rappaport was the guy, the NFL Network reporter, who came on.
Guess I'll have a Bud Light, please. Thank you.
He came on NFL Network Sunday morning.
Here is our lovely waitress right here. I think she should say hello.
Can you say hi real quick?
Hello.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Now you guys can fantasize.
Calm down, Ira.
Coffee or a Phillips?
Good.
Sage has got more coffee.
There we go. All right, so back to Ian Rappaport.
Your wife's going to calm you down tonight. There you go. Coffee.
She does it very well.
All right.
Ian Rappaport.
Okay, look. He comes on NFL Network Sunday morning, and let's loose the report that we've all heard about. Jameis and Cutter are having some tension. Jameis didn't like that Cutter didn't have his back publicly in the way
Unsourced.
After his injury, however that was handled.
He feels the offense is too predictable.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Now, Ira. In that report, and yeah, I'm tapping your sage journalistic experience going back to 1962 with the New York Times. Ian Rappaport delivered that report on NFL Network, yet he never shared any comment from the Buccaneers, not even a no comment or the Buccaneers wouldn't respond.
I know for a fact that he tipped the Bucs off. The Buck organization.
Because he was looking for a comment, right?
That the report was going to be forthcoming. Mm-hmm. That is indisputable.
He was looking for a response.
Yeah. I don't know, but the Bucks were aware that it was imminent. And I believe they told him that there was no truth to
the
story. Zero truth to the story.
Right. So we know that as the sage, that Rappaport reached out to the Bucks and was told this is BS. But he didn't even mention that. So how derelict was he in his reporting there?
Derelict. There's another word. Derelict.
Nothing.
Lee, that's one of the rules of journalism.
That's 101.
When I was at the Tribune, if there was an allegation made, you reach out to the other party, and you get a comment. Now, if they say no comment, that's what you write. You don't beg them for a comment, but you give them the option.
Two things, if anybody still reads newspapers, even online.
A cheap shot over there, Lee.
No. This is like sacrosanct. It's as predictable as they come. If someone doesn't want to comment, you insert in the story, so-and-so refused to comment, or you also read, grief counselors are available.
Or sometimes you read efforts to reach the so-and-so party were unsuccessful. In other words, they didn't return a phone call.
Sure, I understand that.
I understand that.
But nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, that's disgusting.
And it was a very vague report, Steve. And tell the listeners what I mean by vague, especially with regards.
Wait, you're asking me to tell him why it was vague.
You think it's vague too, and with regards to the support or the lack of support during the injury.
Yeah,
situation.
It was vague because it gave no timelines. That's really the bottom line. Rappaport didn't say when their relationship became tense. He didn't say what direction it's going, whether they worked anything out.
He didn't say how Winston felt unsupported during that injury situation. It leaves a lot of speculation.
And I'd venture to say he didn't even bother to ask the Buccaneers to talk to Jameis Winston. He didn't even ask. And you know what? If you're in front of Jameis this week, you should say, Jameis, did Ian Rappaport make any effort to talk to you before his damning report?
You can make an argument. I like Ian. I always get along with Ian. He was always good to me. But you can make an argument that there was a hit piece.
Well, especially the timing of it, Lee.
Right before kickoff?
Oh, boy. As I said, Steve, and I think factually, somebody is out to run Cutter out of town.
Smells that way.
And, obviously they don't think the deal has been done. They don't think the Glazers' mind has been made up on Cutter. Uh-huh. We don't know that for a fact.
We don't
know that.
No, that's sheer speculation.
But the people that leaked this report obviously don't think that Cutter's already been kicked out the door and that he's a lame duck. Otherwise, you don't need the report. So, it's one extra shove out the door.
Well, how about this? And I just thought of this. And this is completely out of the blue. Could it be they're not trying to get Cutter out the door? They're trying to
get Winston change out the door?
No. They're trying to change Cutter's ways. Like, hey, you know, adjust a little bit. Help your quarterback out a little bit more.
You're trying to help him change his ways, Lee, by kicking him out of one buck place. That's the more likely scenario.
I'm not saying whoever did this was savvy.
Yeah.
Ira, I just want to say this. If Buccaneers Media Relations is listening, if Dirk Cutter is listening, if anybody over at the Bucs is listening, if you want to really kill this week, Dirk Cutter is going to take the podium several times for his news conferences. Somebody tell Jameis, hey, you know what? Interrupt the news conference. Go give Dirk a hug and do a joint news conference with Dirk as a unified front.
Even better.
That's how you kill something. That's how you put tremendous video out there that says,
that's
hey,
your optics.
That's your optics, and that's your fun, and everyone will be talking about it.
Even better.
So easy, but they probably won't think of it over there.
Even better. Who's broadcasting the game?
Gruden.
Gruden's not broadcasting. Well, he's a broadcaster, but who is producing and broadcasting?
ESPN.
The game? There you go. They're going to be all over $1 this leading up to the, you know, they don't.
Sure.
If they do anything, they overkill whatever they do. So they're going to have people out at $1. Press box is going to be packed. We're going to be like sardines in there because they're going to have 20 people, 20 staffers.
I don't think the Bucks think that way, Ira. So maybe they'll listen and somebody will pay attention there. Ed, maybe Ed's got a bug here at Hooters, Ed Glazer.
Do you think?
No, I don't think Ed Glazer's
got
a bug.
Do you think that
here.
The specifics and the dynamics of of the opening half? No, I'm serious.
Steve, I just like your vernacular.
Steve, will the dynamics of the opening half Monday night? And by the way, the Bucks are 6-point underdogs at home to Atlanta, and they played Atlanta fairly tough in Atlanta.
You and Dumick need to have a website where you have your lines.
There you go.
Make money,
Steve. Does the actual score at halftime, the dynamics, if the Bucks are down by 14 or up by 4, will that have any effect on the reaction to Gruden growing into the Ring of Honor by the fans? Will it have any effect on the "We Want Gruden" chants, which some of which are sure to be out there? Or it doesn't matter, Lee. The first half doesn't matter in that game. Either one. Lee, I'll go to you first. Does the first half matter? The way the game plays out in terms of the fans chanting Gruden's name?
No and yes. What I mean by that is they're going to chant regardless of what the score is. If the Bucks are down 20 points at halftime, look out.
Now they got a few beers in them.
Exactly. They're going to have a few beers in them. They're down 20 points. They're angry. They're hostile. There'll be Shiano Monday Night Football against, or was it Thursday Night Football, against the Dolphins all over again. You know, where people are showing up with Mercer suits and hats and screaming.
And it's on TV.
Yeah.
National TV.
Yeah, it was a Monday night, the Miami game. It totally matters, Ira, because if fans start chanting Gruden, the rank-and-file average guy who's a casual fan at the game, he's not going to start joining in if the Bucks are up 21-9. They'd be like, hey, the Bucks are winning. This is great. The kid's happy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, but if they're getting train-wrecked like they often are at halftime, sure, it's going to be louder. It's going to be more impactful.
On top of that.
And on top of that, if the Bucks are leading big at halftime, and this is not that I think this will really happen, but if they are, you might actually have people countering the Gruden chants with Cutter chants. Because there is a faction of people who like Cutter out there.
And don't like changing coaches every
exactly.
2 years. Now, Lee, another thing that we know for a fact is going to happen on Monday night. The Glazers will be on the field with Chucky. They're not going to be staying in their suite. They're going to be on the field when a Ring of Honor inductee ceremony occurs. The Glazers are on the field.
Isn't Joel usually the addressee, for lack of a better term?
Brian a lot of times.
Yeah, Brian
but
usually
I think
does.
The Glazer family
will be out en masse on the field.
Sure.
So I hear that Gruden has been limited to a three-minute speech. Three minutes.
Don't forget, I
believe the whole halftime is 12 minutes. And you know what I'm thinking? And I hope this doesn't happen. It's not fair. But towards the end, as Chucky's winding up his speech, here come the Buck players back on the field, led by Cutter. And at that point, Gruden's wrapping up, and the fans are screaming, "We want Chucky." And here comes Cutter back on the field. That's rough.
What's going to have to be interesting, could be rough. What could be very interesting is, let's say the Bucks are down 3 scores early third quarter. Like Ira says, fans have a few beers in them.
Sure.
They're angry. They're upset. They're chanting, "We want Gruden." Sean McDonough, the play-by-play man for ESPN, straight arrow. And he's multiple times in multiple interviews, nothing to do with Chucky or the Bucks. He's like, hey, if I'm a fan and I see something, I have to address it. Well, if the chants are overwhelming, "We want Gruden," the Bucks are getting killed, you know he's going to address it.
Yeah.
He's got to address
it. And that's going to be very awkward for Gruden in the booth.
Oh, very awkward. Look, if the back...
It's awkward if Chucky wants it to be awkward.
If the backdrop of the third quarter is fans singing, "Bring back Gruden," you know, that's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy. So, exciting.
And you expect that from a segment of the stick carriers, correct? a segment.
Absolutely, yeah. Justin Pulaski, the Bucks Uncensored podcast, the Stick Carriers, he's all in on Gruden. And mostly because he's done with Cutter. He just thinks Cutter hasn't done a very good job, which is hard to argue.
You want to see a little more passion out of Cutter, Lee, at the podium?
No. I want him to be him. I don't want anything fake. And that, you know, Cutter is not a Jerry Glanville kind of guy.
Somebody's not. You know, one thing I want to say in Cutter's behalf here, Steve, and there's a lot of things to say in his behalf, but I think this one's important. Look, guys, we've been around him for 3 years. He doesn't make excuses.
No,
he doesn't make excuses.
Straight shooter.
He never wants to talk about injuries as a reason we can't win. He's very much a straight shooter in that regard.
I've noticed something last year, but it's getting really bad this week. I don't know if bad's the right term, but unique. And I noticed him doing this last year, but he's really been doing it the last couple weeks, and it kind of gets under his skin. And it reminds me of what Greg Schiano said. Schiano said the biggest surprise he had taking over an NFL team wasn't the X's and O's, wasn't preparing the team. The biggest surprise was media. He goes, it's overwhelming. And he did not expect that. And notice, well, recently, it's almost every press conference, Cutter will answer a question like, well, we talked about that the other day. We talked about that last night.
And
I don't think Dirk understands that, you know, I don't care what entity is covering the Bucks. There's always different people there at different times.
Maybe we didn't get a good enough answer first time.
Well, I think the core problem is this. Schiano was a detailed guy. Cutter is known. If you talk to people who know Cutter, he's an extreme detail guy. Everything's planned out, and they put a lot of time into that planning, and they're detail nuts. But both Schiano and Cutter, they're not putting the time in to those news conferences. They're not planning. They're just, okay, what do we got, guys? That's not how you do it. You got to put some effort in, or you have to have a PR team that forces you to put in that effort. And Cutter, you know, he's just all over the place. Look at how he botched the whole Doug Martin starting thing. Just come out, Dirk, and say, Doug Martin's a starter. Team knows it. And we'll see. He's got to perform like everybody else, but I don't believe guys lose their job for getting hurt. We'll see. And nobody will ask him again. But he blew it. He's dancing all week long. Stroud's asking him, angling for, and he knows everybody's fishing for an answer, and he won't. He blew it.
Now, Lee, tomorrow on Thursday, we get Mike Smith. Here comes Mike Smith.
What the hell is he going to say?
He's going to say, old man, ask the first question.
Yeah, and outside of that.
And that's me. That's me. Old man, you got different things. And no, I didn't start in 1962. Let's dispel that.
Okay, room. 67.
76. And a lowly clerk.
I got to say, I had an email from a guy. I don't know who he was. Maybe this goes back about a month. He saw you on Fox 13, your Fox Tailgate Sunday. He's like, nah, I expected Ira to look like 80 years old. He looks great.
Thank you.
Some people believe it. Go ahead.
All right. Now, Lee, you know where I sit, second row on the aisle. That's my spot.
Yeah, the other Untermenschen us on the front line.
I let all the young chipmunks sit in the first row. Let them have fun. Meanwhile, I get the first question for Smith. Guys, I'm telling you right now, you know, if Smith listens to this podcast tomorrow morning, he'll get a preview, but I don't care. I got my opening question. You know, there's no more softballs. You're 4-9. Your softball days are over. Coach, we're going to see Brent Grimes on Julio Jones. That's my opening. I'm going right to the source.
Fair question, but he would never answer
why
that.
Why not? If his answer 2 weeks ago was, we don't know where Julio Jones is going to line up. And I never asked a follow-up. I walked out of that session saying, how could I not ask a follow-up? That didn't make any sense.
You won't get a direct answer on that, I guarantee you.
So, Steve, that's my question for Mike Smith.
I'm glad you said that because on my list, my encyclopedia here, Ira, I wrote, are we going to see Brent Grimes cover Julio Jones on Sunday? And if we do, and we're talking a man-to-man primarily, you know, Grimes moving side to side covering Jones.
Follow him to the men's room. That's what you do.
like Sapp
like
and a production
like
assistant.
We're going to get to Sapp.
All right.
Because you got to throw a vibrator in a podcast when you can, right? You got to do it. All right.
Now you're back with Tom Corrin again. All right.
No, seriously.
All right. So go ahead, Steve.
No, seriously. Julio Jones, if we do see Brent Grimes cover him around the field, is that an admission that the last time they totally dropped the ball?
Of course it is. Of course it is, Lee. I don't want to see Ryan Smith hooked up with Julio Jones on 3rd and 6.
Unless you got money on the Falcons.
I don't want to say it. I mean, and I'm not trying to pick on Ryan Smith.
Yeah, but I mean, the mismatch is a mismatch.
Yeah, you know. And by the way, Julio Jones, I believe, caught three touchdowns the whole darn season. And two of them was against the Bucs that day. You got to have a better answer than that, Mike Smith. I love you, Mike Smith, but you better have a better answer than we don't know where Julio's going to line up.
Lee, what do you think we see? You think we see Grimes shadow him or
maybe,
no?
Maybe Grimes doesn't want to do it, Lee. Maybe Grimes doesn't want to do it.
I doubt that because he's a warrior.
No chance.
He went against Beckham and he locked Beckham up.
All right.
So I can't believe that he would, I'll take care of Beckham. Julio Jones, no, I want no part of him. That's difficult to believe.
You got to give Ryan Smith
Miko,
a
you got to slap Ira around here for that.
You got to give Ryan Smith a break. You got to be a big man on Monday night and take on their best.
Well, here's
the Bucks' best. You take on their best.
Here's what I would like to see.
And you know what? I got confidence in Grimes that he can contain him.
Especially on a Monday night. I mean, it's a showcase situation.
You know, Miko screaming at him. It's a beautiful scenario.
Here's what I would like to see. And maybe this is just really far-fetched out there. But it would show me that Smith realizes that, you know what? I got to do something really out there. Something wild. Well, what the Bucks did not do, and I saw this past week on NFL Network, they basically had a segment. Michael Irvin was doing it, how to slow down Julio Jones. And Michael Irvin said, you must stop this guy at the line of scrimmage. You can't let him get ahead of steam.
I agree.
And they showed what the Vikings did.
I
wrote this on JoeBucksFan.com. They said, well, that's Xavier Rhodes. Well, I'm sorry. Not every freaking team has Xavier Rhodes, Julio Jones doesn't go for 200.
Now, you can't hit him past 5 yards.
Here's what you do.
It's difficult.
Here's what you do. Something different.
You jam him.
That's what I'm getting at. And who is quick enough and big enough to jam the guy? And like I said, this is unorthodox. This is out there. But it shows me Smith is willing to try something because, you know what? Desperate times call for desperate measures. Put Lavonnie David out there.
Interesting.
Put Lavonnie David out there. It's like you don't expect Lavonnie David to cover Julio Jones, but you expect him to slam him at the line, jam him up, take him off his pattern.
He's saying you got to push the envelope when you're 4-9, and but I understand that.
I mean, I don't disagree.
Or Kendall Beckwith, or you pick the linebacker.
I don't disagree. I just think any corner should be able to jam a guy. You just run right into him. I mean, it's that's football.
Now, then we go back to the old problem where Matt Ryan's got 5 seconds to survey the field. That's the overarching problem. We know that.
But the biggest problem is, as we saw up in Atlanta a couple weeks ago, Julio Jones.
And Steve made a great point.
You know, if Sanu beats you, Sanu beats you. But you don't let Julio Jones beat you.
You're right, Steve. That is a newsflash when I give you some credit.
It is.
But you did say, and you pointed out, shockingly, in your mind and with some justification, 0 sacks. For Lavonte David, 0?
Yeah, it's unusual, especially
on Luciano, the guy's a sack master.
Well, the scary part is that he's...
Bill Sheridan! Where's he?
God love Bill Sheridan.
And we're not talking Phil Sheridan, we're talking Bill
God
Sheridan.
God love Bill Sheridan, who invited Bucks fans to help him at 5 a.m. at $1 if they wanted to help Dover fans.
And they showed up.
It's like when Gerald McCoy challenged... fans to come and talk to him one-on-one, and the Bucks wouldn't let him in.
Lavonte was a one-man show that year. One-man show.
No, but seriously, Lavonte has been a Pro Bowl player this year, but the blitzing hasn't gotten home, and that's just that. And they blitzed a lot. That's on Lavonte. He just hasn't been there.
They are blitzing a lot.
Buccaneers, Ira, Pro Bowl voting ends today. As people listen to this podcast, it ends Thursday. It's the final day for Pro Bowl voting. I maintain that really Lavonnie David is the only worthy Pro Bowler on this team. If you really look at, and I'm talking starters at the position, if you really look at it, what do you think?
I probably tend to agree. I think you could make a case for Grimes.
Yeah, outside of those two, forget about it.
I think you could make a case for Grimes. And outside of those two, next question. Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is. For Mike Evans, it's been a bad year, by Mike Evans' standards.
For his standards, yes.
Yeah.
For normal wide receivers,
Ira, shooting you back to the coaching situation before we get to Warren Sapp and his
how long
escapades.
Is this podcast going to go
on? You got to go somewhere. We're at 50, 55 minutes.
You need another cup of coffee? We'll spring for it. Don't worry about it.
I got a rerun of Younger coming on at 10 o'clock.
All right, we'll get you out of here.
He's got a curfew here.
We'll get you out of here.
Well, Dante, you got to take Dante for a walk before you
go. Two and a half men have a good episode tonight. Chloe's coming over.
I thought you were going to rewatch Sweet Magnolias.
Continue. We've been watching the Vietnam documentary, by the way. We have been watching
Landmark
it.
Series.
I have it in a box set. I spent money. Yes, I did. And we've seen 6 out of 10 episodes. Very depressing. We'll talk about it.
It is depressing.
At a future podcast.
But it's a landmark.
It is a landmark.
Where was I going?
And Tom Corin is not on the documentary.
I was going somewhere. I forgot. You got
no
me off. Course.
So we're going to SAP, but there was a coaching, I think, before.
No,
you're going to revisit coaching?
You're going somewhere.
We were talking Pro Bowl.
Yeah, Pro Bowl.
I think you said it's not on your sheet. You lost your spot.
I thought you said you were going to revisit coaching and then Warren Sapp.
I don't know. Oh, yeah, there's a Warren Sapp. I thought we talked about Sapp.
No, we didn't talk
about it. Not on the podcast.
That was before. That was before. All right, I forgot, Ira, so you're off the hook on that one.
We also got to make our picks.
We got to make our picks. Yeah, we'll wrap it up. All right, look, Warren Sapp, we know what happened to Warren Sapp.
Yeah.
We know what happened with Sapp. He's on the long list of guys accused for sexual harassment at NFL Network. And
why is he not on NFL Network
and
anymore?
And we know that he was not on NFL Network because he got caught in a $600 threesome.
Thank you.
At a Super Bowl a few years ago. Yeah, 2 Super Bowls ago. So he's.
I want to get in. What NFL podcast talks about $600 threesomes?
You know what's funny about this is that the only guy who's defended himself publicly is the guy that's not no longer employed by NFL Network. We don't hear from the other guys, rightly?
Well,
Sapp goes right on radio and gives a diet.
I would hope their legal counsel is smart enough to say stay away. You know, from
in that
radio.
In that respect, it's a bit of a non-story. But of course, anything Sapp does is of interest to Buck fans.
Of course.
But in the national scope, he doesn't work for NFL Network.
Well, he's a big enough figure that TMZs of the world will cover that.
Well, Ira, look, Warren Sapp, obviously, it's a no-brainer. He's going to be there on Monday night.
Yes.
John Gruden, you know, and he's at a lot of games anyway. Do you think that's an issue with his profile, or is ESPN going to keep the cameras off him? Or
well, I think
are the Bucks going to finally say, enough, Sapp? You're always in trouble with hookers and
it's
this.
It's unfortunate for Sapp, Lee, because I think he's worked pretty hard the last couple of years to rehab his image, mm-hmm. at least with the media he has. And I don't know how successful he's been with the public in that regard, but he's trying to be on the comeback trail, and this doesn't help him.
You know, I think there's a HBO documentary or a series waiting to be made.
Oh, would I love to see a football life? Oh,
No.
This would have to be a 2-hour show.
No, this
You'd
would
be on it. You'd be on it.
I'd be on it.
This would be entitled Trouble with Hookers.
Trouble with Hookers. You know, speaking of that, Steve, quick
speaking
story.
Speaking of Trouble with Hookers.
No, quick story for our listeners.
What do you know, Ira?
I'm sending this one out to
Guam. What are you suggesting?
Guam and Panama. A few years back, maybe 4 or 5 years back, NFL Films got in touch with me, and they wanted me to go down to One Buck Place. This is during May, nothing going on. And on a Tuesday afternoon, I go down there. They wire me up. They sit me in the room, and it's one of those top 10 shows. And it was Players We Love to Hate.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy tells me before I go on, hey, Sapp's been listed. He's at number 10, you know. They go down to number one. Maybe Conrad Dobler. Well, you know, might have been number one or whatever. Well, anyway, Sapp was number 10.
Conrad Dobler.
So I sit down, and I got the microphone and everything. I'm all wired up. And the guy says to me, Ira, you've dealt with Warren Sapp a lot here in Tampa. He's number 10 on this list of players you love to hate. What's your reaction? I looked at the guy, and this made the cutting room floor. They didn't cut it. And I look at the guy, and I go, number 10? Who's ahead of him, Attila the Hun? The guy loved it.
What was your opening line when you were making the case for Sapp before your brethren at the Hall of Fame?
Well, my opening line was, in the immortal words of Keyshawn Johnson, you know, he belongs. He's an asshole, but he belongs. That was.
I thought you were saying he's my a-hole.
Oh, no, I didn't say that. Okay. I didn't say that. But I didn't defend him, off-field activities. Why should I, when it's not supposed to be taken into consideration?
And how many years did he not talk to you?
I believe the last 4 years.
No. But, I mean, when you were covering him, wasn't it like a year and a half you wouldn't talk to you?
Well, one year I didn't put him on my all-trip team, and that was the end of it. That was the end of it. Then I find out he looked back at the next training camp, and he talked about the 2001 season and said, I hurt my pectoral muscle in September, and I couldn't help my ball club. I was crying myself to sleep every night. And I went up to him afterwards. I got him alone. I go, you said you couldn't help the ball club. You weren't very effective as a player. And you're pissed off that I didn't name you to the all-trip team as one of the 2 defensive tackles in the whole league? I said, well, what's going on? He goes, Well, it's not so much that you didn't pick me, but you picked Gary Walker from the Jacksonville Jaguars. I hate that guy. I hate that guy, Kaufman. You picked the wrong guy.
That's a great story.
That's a great story. That's a great story. All right, before we hit the predictions real quick, Ira, I just have to throw at you Doug Marrone. You laughed at me on this podcast.
I did.
You laughed at me in January when I told you Doug Marrone would be a Coach of the Year candidate when Mike Smith was up for the job. You laughed at me, so I have to throw it back at you. I felt like I had to do it. So there you go.
I tell you what, Lee, they got the look of a dangerous team. You saw the game last week. They got that's a hell of a pass rush, not just Calais Campbell.
Well, I tell you what, if I was Belichick, I'd be scared to death of facing them in the playoffs.
I don't want to play that team.
Yeah, they're
now they got Blake Bortles, but he's starting to play better.
But that defense.
A running game and defense.
They're out to hurt people, which is it's a defense. That's the next level of always a great defense is when they're looking to murder somebody. And that's
when
sort
you're
of
out physical the Seahawks,
yeah.
You've done something.
Yeah, they got in their heads, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
So
who's in the middle of it? Michael Bennett,
yeah.
Once again.
Ira, you know the NFL is a what's hot lately kind of league. When you look at what Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone have done, with all the success by running that team into the ground in training camp, and here they are just – fresh as daisies in December, you know, ready to kill people. Do you think the Bucs are looking for that ties to Gruden of like, hey, you know what? A hard line approach, maybe that's back in the NFL. Or do you think that ties at all? That helps?
It's interesting because in my chats with Gruden, my private talks with Gruden, and I ask him, you know, what's going on with Thursday night football and all the penalties and the injuries. The first thing he always comes back to, they're killing the coaches with the practices. You can't do this. You can't do that. It really frustrates a guy like Gruden. And he's going to find a way to not have a soft training camp if he's the coach of this
team. Steve brought this up earlier. He never had to deal with that before. How does he adjust?
Yeah, that's going to be a big frustration for him. Big.
And last thing on the coaching front, Ira. In the NFL, we've got the Panthers, the Chargers, and the Jaguars, who may be going worst to first. Three teams.
That's what's great about the NFL. That's a great part.
Well, someone tip
of the
off
NFL.
The Bucks about this.
Is that driving the Glazers nuts that these teams are going worst to first?
How could it not? How could it not?
I mean, the Glazers. I don't know. It's a bad year
look
for
at the
Cutter.
Rams. The rise of the Rams. The Eagles.
It says more about Jeff Fisher than it does.
The young quarterbacks. Yeah, if you're the Glazers, you know you could just imagine what Ed Glazer's saying.
I think
there.
It's a bad year for Cutter on that front, where you got a hard drive. Cutter was like, let's do everything we can not to work the players hard, and meanwhile. The upstart team, it's crazy. All right.
He always credits Jack Del Rio for that. I'm like, yeah, okay, I could understand if you got that from Parcells or Walsh, but Jack Del Rio.
Yeah, that's in Lee's craw, the whole Jack Del Rio. That's like you. No, I won't go there.
Never
I won't go there. All right. Predictions. We
can
got a game
him
Monday
something?
Night. Go ahead.
When Mike Francesa was on NFL Network this morning, I talked to him.
I got
to
see that video.
I mean, he took over the show. If I was NFL Network executive, I would not let him leave
you
the studio.
You put him on the pregame NFL show.
Forget the pregame. Well, on NFL Network.
Yeah.
I mean, he was fantastic. Anyway, I told you they hit him with, like, who would you pick, LBJ or FDR or Secretary or Man of War, stuff like that. But here was a football one. I want your response, but I'll tell you Francesa's response, which is very compelling.
Lawrence Taylor or Devontae Bond? Go ahead.
Bill Belichick or Bill Walsh?
Bill Belichick or Bill Walsh. Sorry, Mr. Walsh. Going with Belichick.
And you want to hear Francesa's reasoning? It's
who'd
really compelling.
Who did he take?
Oh, he took Belichick, and this right. is why. And it's really interesting. He says all these coaches, Walsh, Joe Gibbs, they burn themselves out. They get tired. The game passes them by. They can't handle it. Because Belichick's been doing this for 15 years. He's fresh. He's always looking for another edge. He's always ahead of the game. And he said that is why he would pick Belichick over Bill Walsh, only for that reason. And that's a very interesting outlook.
Now, some people would say, what would Belichick be without Brady? I mean, you got to throw it out there. It's a legitimate question. But the year that Brady got hurt, he went 11-5 with Matt Cassel. That's strong.
Well, look, unless I miss something, Bill Walsh had Hall of Fame quarterbacks as well.
So yes, he did.
That's one thing. And then the Matt Cassel thing, 11-5, and it's, you know.
By the way, quarterbacks plural. Steve Young too. Yeah,
yeah,
and Steve.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's well. Did
I'm not
did
sure.
I don't think Walsh coached Steve Young.
Walsh might have resigned.
Walsh was gone when Young was the starter.
Okay,
but he brought Walsh in. Obviously, he
conducted
the trade with
Young,
the Bucks.
Young was the understudy to Montana,
and he used. And I emphasize the word used. Steve Young to always motivate Joe Montana.
Yes,
he would pull Montana, put Young in just to get in his head.
Fun stuff. All right, prediction Monday, Lee. What's going on Monday night?
Bucks, I think it'll be closer than what we think it may be, only because the Bucks play decent defense at home. No way I can soberly pick the Bucks. The Bucks will keep it close. I say 31-27 Atlanta.
All right, I'll bet second over here. Isbits. I think the Bucks are I think they're spent, Steve. I think they're spent. They gave it their best shot against Detroit. They rallied. They tied the game, and then they end up losing at home. No pressure on Stafford. There's no reason to think that Matt Ryan's going to be under duress.
No.
Steve, I think they're going to get beaten up. People say, well, wait a minute. It's on national television, Ring of Honor. Here comes Buck Pride. Well, that hasn't always worked in the past, Steve. In fact, I think it was the Falcons that administered the beating that Sapp and Brooks couldn't watch the scoreboard.
You're right. And when's the last time the Bucks won a Ring of Honor game?
I don't like the looks of this, Steve. The Falcons are well motivated. They're not out of this thing by any means. 34-14 visitors.
All right, Sage. I am going to say that, you know what? I don't think the Bucks are spent. I think this is probably their last game, and then I think they're going to roll over Christmas Eve, and we'll see what happens on the final week. But I think they're going to bring a lot of juice to this Monday Night Football. First time Jameis has been at home.
No McCoy.
On Monday Night Football. I understand. I'm not saying. I just think the energy will be there. The crowd will actually be there. But Atlanta doesn't have traveling fans. I think that'll help a little bit if it doesn't go south early. And I'm going to say this right up front. I think Jameis being motivated and healthy and doing a lot of good things amidst the bad stuff, and Peyton Barber finally being freed to start this game, is going to make a difference. And I'm picking the Bucks in an upset, 28-27. I think they're going to.
How do you know Barber start?
I just believe.
Yeah, we're good.
I believe it. I believe.
Hey,
I believe.
Here.
You're cynical, Sage. You're cynical, Sage.
Probably our buffalo chicken sandwich.
Sounds like a plan. Did you watch Hard Knocks?
I did not.
You know what Hard Knocks is?
Are you, still
you a Bucks fan?
This, Steve? You still got this
you
thing
are.
Going?
Who's your favorite player?
Oh, man. I don't know. Whoever the best looking one is.
Oh, I can't go there. But who should coach the Bucks next year?
I don't know.
That works for me.
Sorry, guys.
Very good. So when you come to Port Richey Hooters, ask for Bree.
There you go. Are you still taping, Steve?
Yeah, of course I'm still going. All right, so. That's the upset call, Ira, making it. Did I give a score? 28-27. I think they got one more in them, and this is it. Beyond this week, I'm done.
I could go a long way to keeping Dirk Cutter in pewter.
It sure could. All right, fellas. Ira, we'll see you Monday night. Get out of here, buddy.